Afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to hour number two of the Mark Moses Show. All right, we're now going to get this fine gentleman on, and we're going to talk some Tiger. We're going to talk some PGA golf. We're going to go to the NFL draft, the Bucks. We're going to go around the horn. And this guy does a great job with Pressbox Radio and his podcast, Powers on Sports. He is the great Jason Powers. Jason, how you doing today?
Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Hey,
little delay, but hey, we're ready for it anytime you need us, man.
Yeah, I appreciate coming on. I made a boo-boo earlier, so let's do this, man. I was on with you on News 13 on Sunday night. We were recapping the Masters, and Scheffler wins his second green jacket. How did he get it done? Because, I mean, it was just so dominating by him all weekend long.
Well, I mean, he's obviously in the last, you know, his second Masters win. He's clearly the best player in the game right now. I think Sunday was kind of more of a result of other guys faltering and he played really good Sunday. I'm not going to dispute that he didn't play well, but you saw some of the youth of the other guys. You saw DeChambeau. You saw, Schauffele falter a little bit. You saw Max Homa. You saw, Ludvig Åberg, who he's going to be great, by the way. If you didn't watch the Masters on the air, guys, this guy's rookie, first ever major, and he's going to be great. But Scheffler, give him credit. He made all the shots he had to make at the right times. He made the incredible shot at 14, the approach shot, and he didn't implode, which the other guys did to some degree. So, Scheffler is obviously a number one player in the world. Couple things to remember. He's never won a tournament after the month of April, after the Masters, in his career. All of his wins have been between February and the Masters. So I want to see Scheffler, before we make him an all-time great, put him in the Hall of Fame. Let's win a tournament after April, and let's win a couple more majors other than the Masters.
The debate question you and me did Sunday night, and we'll do it right now, is can he be the face of PGA golf moving forward, Jason?
I don't think so, only because it's not his fault. He's just a very mild-mannered family guy. He doesn't have a whole lot of personality. He doesn't exude a lot of emotion on the course. You know, sports fans, we're all sports fans. We like the guy that either fans love to hate, show some emotion, show some bravado, and that's just not Scotty Scheffler. Again, he's not going to bring viewers to CBS or NBC on a Sunday afternoon because he's in contention. Now, again, that's not his fault. It's just the way it is. You know, with Tiger, with Mickelson, with Koepka, with DeChambeau, these guys that have some personality, Rory's got some personality. They're going to bring some viewers to the screen. I just don't think he's the best player in golf, but I don't think he's the face of golf right now because of the way he carries himself. And it's not a bad thing. It's just he's a very mild-mannered guy, family guy. He's got a kid on the way. You know, you saw the storyline about he might leave the tournament if his wife went into labor. By the way, there was no chance he was leaving the tournament if his wife was in labor, between you and me, but that's just my opinion.
I imagine he called her, just hold on, baby. I got to win this.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Or the message got sent to his people, if she does go into labor, we're not telling Scotty till he gets off the 18th green.
You know what's cool also? I love that moment. You see this every year. The guy is so locked in. Anyone who's got that chance to win. And when that ball went in on 18, you could just see the relief. It felt like that energy left him. Did you feel that as well?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a grind. I mean, that tournament, especially this year with the windy conditions they had to deal with on Thursday and Friday and part of Saturday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a grind. Any major championship, and when you're focused and locked in for four straight days, I mean, yeah, sure. You absolutely should exude some emotion at the 18th when you know it's over. I mean, that tournament was basically over when he got through 16 and didn't hit the ball in the water on 16. Yeah. The tournament was basically over. But yes, great. That's what you want to see out of your champions, which is great. But again, he's never going to be a figure, I don't think, that people are going to say, I hate that guy because he's so good. I mean, he's a tremendous player right now, having a great run. But again, let's see him win some tournaments throughout the year. Let's see him win some majors other than just the Masters. Go win a PGA. Go win a British Open. Go win the Hartford Open in July or whatever tournament you want to pick. Then we can start to say he's getting to that level of, and he's not Tiger level by any means, but then we can start saying he can be one of the all-time best.
The analogy I told you earlier today is it's like Tim Duncan, where it's just, it's like a robot. He just, he wins, but there's no personality. Is that a good comparison to this guy?
Perfect, man. That's perfect. That's a perfect analogy. You know, Duncan played in San Antonio, not a media heaven. You know, I think Scheffler's from Texas. I know he's from Dallas, which is a good media market. But, I mean, he doesn't live in Orlando where you're near where you're at, where a lot of the golfers. There's a lot of guys that live in Dallas. But, you know, you're not going to see Scheffler on late night with Seth Meyers and, you know, on the late show and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, that's just not his personality, and that's fine. He can go be great and be one of the best of, you know, be a great golfer of this time. But, again, is he going to be a polarizing figure in the sport that's going to draw viewers to the television sets on Saturdays and Sundays? I just don't see it.
All right, so as a talk show host, what do you want? Like, it's 90s WWE where he's doing Suck It and he's talking trash. Is that what you want, Jason?
Yeah, you're like a little NWO. You're like a little Hogan turning heel, a little Hall and Nash with the bad guys. Yeah, man, you got to rile up the crowd, and you got to have a little bit of that. It's kind of like tennis, too, when you had Connors and McEnroe. Those were the bad guys. Pete Sampras is another great example, kind of like a Tim Duncan. Not a lot of personality, but he was clearly the best guy of his seven or eight year run. And, you know, Pete Sampras wasn't bringing guys to the screen more so. You wanted to see McEnroe and Connors and Boris Becker blow up and have some conflict. And that just wasn't Pete Sampras' thing, and I don't think it's Scottie Scheffler's thing either.
We're here with Jason Powers. His great job with his podcast, Powers on Sports, and also co-host with Press Box Radio Show. Follow him on Twitter, JPO Sports. I could tell you like the bad guys. I'm learning about your personality.
Well, it's not that I like the bad guys. I just like to have a little bit of conflict, a little bit of drama. Yeah. You want the crowd to be, you know, with Koepka. You know, Koepka would always make a comment to the crowd, or he'd be a little surly with the media. That's what you want to see. That's what you like to see in your sports guys that are on top.
I made this analogy on Monday about Tiger, and I love Tiger, and I always rooted for him. I think he's the best ever in my generation. I think the window is closed. I don't think he can compete anymore. How about you, Jason?
I don't think he's going to be, again, I think he probably has about a 2-year window till he's probably 50, maybe 51, that if he can stay healthy and have the ability to play more regularly, I do think he'll be in the mix at some point in a major again. Will he win a major again? I don't know. But to me, if Tiger can show the physical wherewithal to be able to make it through 72 holes, again, does he have to play 10 times a year? No. But I think he needs to play at least once between these majors to keep his sharpness and his competitiveness. And if he's able to do that, I think he will make a run at one of these majors in the next couple of years if he can stay healthy. Again, will he win it? Who knows? But wouldn't that be – you talk about a story. We all saw the story 5 years ago at Augusta, the comeback from all the turmoil off the course. And even with a guy like Tiger, for so many years he was quiet. He wasn't a polarizing figure with people. But then he had all the scandal. Then he had all the issues with injuries. And that's what made the return to glory when he won at Augusta 5 years so much more dramatic and such a spectacle. But I think if he can play at least once in between these majors, you know, play 8 or 10 times a year, I think then he could compete for another major. And I think he will be, before he retires, he's going to be in the mix one more time because his swing wasn't bad at Augusta. I just think the weather conditions – compiling with the first time he's played that many holes in forever, I think that accumulated and that caused the bad weekend. But Tiger was in the mix at the end of the second round. He was like 5-6 shots off the lead. I think he's going to be in the mix at least one more time in his career.
Have you ever been to Augusta before?
I have not. I need to do that one of these days. I'm 50 now, so I need to do that. But, you know, I've never been. But, you know, everybody that says it, says it's a bucket list. If you're a sports fan, it's a bucket list item to do at least once in your life. So I look forward to it.
You notice,
what about you?
I've never gone, and it's funny. Every time you talk to a person who's gone, they give you the same response, Jason. It's like, oh, I went in 97. It was incredible. That's the answer every time. Okay. Oh, I went in 2009. Tiger hit this shot at 17. It's the same response every time. And you've told me this before. You've never seen Tiger play. Is that high on your bucket list of athletes? Like, man, I should see Tiger before it's too late.
You know, for me, I'm not going to follow Tiger around for 8-10 holes. I would love to be on a on the at the good thing about golf is you could be within 10 or 15 feet of these guys on the tee box. I'd love to see Tiger hit a monster drive at a tee box. I'd love to see Tiger, you know, hit an iron from the fairway and hit one stiff. But do I have to be, do I have to follow Tiger for five or six holes? No. I'd like to see it one time. I've been to an LPGA tour event, and to think that the women who hit the ball as cleanly as and as violent as they do, to think that the men do it even more violently and even more with more power and, you know, pristineness, that's a cool thing. That's the one great thing about golf is you can be pretty close to these guys, whether it's on the green, at the tee box. You can see their greatness as opposed to an NFL guy where you're going to be so far away from a Pat Mahomes, so far away from a Michael Jordan, unless you're in Mark Moses country, sitting courtside at the old arena when Michael Jordan came rolling through, or at the old Chicago Stadium. Yeah. But that's the cool thing about greatness is when you're so close to these guys, you can see them in their element.
All right. I like you said, Mark Moses country. I've never heard this before. I don't know. Maybe I could be the prime minister there. We'll see. But it reminds me.
Mark Moses, you're sitting courtside, baby. I know you.
Yeah.
You got all the connections.
I think about, like, standing by Steph Curry and thinking he is the best shooter in the world. People play basketball all over the world. The best. And even when you stand by LeBron, and you've told me, you know, like with Tom Brady, watching him play, this is the best of the best in the world. This is him. That's why I got to see Messi this summer if he comes to Orlando. You got to see these.
Right.
If you get
right.
TV doesn't give it justice. I agree with you. All right. Let's talk Buccaneers. The NFL draft is coming up next Thursday. I want your take because I know you do a great job covering the Bucs with your podcast. They went through an offseason where they get Mike Evans. They get Baker Mayfield on a good deal for the team. Did you like all these moves they've made here in the offseason going into the draft?
I absolutely did. I think it was a great thing to get both those guys back. Obviously, we saw the production out of Baker Mayfield last year, kind of found himself in that new offensive scheme with Dave Canales. Obviously, Canales moves on to Carolina. I think the Bucs did a great job re-signing Mike Evans. Again, he'll be a Hall of Famer. You don't want to see Mike Evans play the last couple of years of his career with another team when you could easily, the great thing they didn't do, the Bucs did not sell their soul and sell their salary cap space to sign both those guys. Both of them were reasonable contracts, especially Baker. They didn't pay Baker $40 million like Daniel Jones got, which we now see that was a mistake that the Giants did. They paid him fair market value. I think Baker realized he wants to be in a spot where he's liked and he's loved. They like him here. He's shown some productivity. And again, you have to, if you're Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers, I need to see another good year out of it. The Bucs would be willing to extend them even longer, but you got to show 2-3 years of consistent play to get that $40 million plus kind of money that so many teams unfortunately overpay. Same with Mike Evans. Mike Evans has made a lot of money with the Buccaneers. They paid him a fair value. Could he have gotten a few more dollars somewhere else? Maybe, but I think Evans is really content on finishing his career with one team. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He loves it in Tampa. Tampa loves him. He's done a lot of great community work here. And he's just going to keep doing it. And the Bucs have shown Mike Evans they're willing to spend money to stay competitive. That's the important thing, too.
Okay, you're in the draft for the Buccaneers. What are your needs heading into next Thursday?
Yep, there's a couple things I would say. I think offensive line, meaning guard center, that's the one spot that you could really identify that the Buccaneers were weak in. They haven't been able to run the ball really good the last couple of years. Since Ryan Jensen, who we all know was the all-pro center that the Buccaneers had with Tom Brady, he basically had to retire because of a knee injury. The center spot and the left guard spot have kind of been the weak spots the last couple of years. I could see the Bucs drafting a center. There's a couple of good guys. There's the kid from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson. Then there's a kid from Duke who there's been a lot of talk about. The Bucs might be in the mix there as a center. But if they can get one of those two guys, I think that'd be a good need fit. You also have a need at corner. Remember, the Bucs traded Carlton Davis about a month or so ago, Leading up to the draft here. They could, as you know, Mark, you can never have enough corners in this league with as many teams throwing the ball. So if one of the good corners fell to them at the 26th pick, I could see them doing that. And here's a sneaky one I could see them doing. Wide receiver, speed wide receiver. This is a very plentiful draft with wide receivers. There's a ton of really good ones in the first two rounds or so. If one of those really good ones fell to them at 26, I could see them definitely drafting for a receiver of the future. Mike Evans is over 30 now. Chris Godwin is a great possession receiver, but he's not a speedster, and he's not going to be a number one. If one of these really good receivers were to slip to them, maybe a guy like Brian Thomas out of LSU, one of those kind of guys, I could see the Buccaneers maybe taking a speed wide receiver at 26 as well.
We're here with Jason Powers. His great job with his podcast at Powers on Sports. Also, he calls Press Box Radio Show. Follow him on Twitter, JPO Sports. Okay.
All right.
Who is the favorite in the NFC South? Is it the Bucs who've won it multiple years in a row, or is Atlanta with all this hype getting Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I think you're going to see all the media are going to think that Kirk Cousins in Atlanta is going to be the team to beat. I would say it's probably a pretty close dead heat between the Bucs and the Falcons. Again, if you're Atlanta, you've not had a quarterback since Matt Ryan. Major upgrade with Kirk Cousins. You got weapons. You got the former Gator at tight end Pitts. You got Bijan Robinson. You got Drake London. You got a pretty good offensive line. Defensively, they're still a work in progress. And here's the other key thing. We all think everybody just is going to fit in their role. They have a completely new coaching staff. Raheem Morris, who we know from Tampa, got his first head coaching opportunity down here 10 or 11 years ago, flamed out down here. He's getting a second opportunity, bringing a lot of the Rams offensive philosophies with them. So we'll see. They're going to probably put in that Rams offensive system. But, again, these things don't just click over in one offseason. Typically, it takes an offseason or two to get the full program in place if you're the Atlanta Falcons. But clearly the national media, I think, are going to be all over the Falcons. And here's one other thing, guys, to remember. Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles tendon injury. Yeah. We don't know if he's going to be fully ready to go, do we?
No, you don't know. I think the Buccaneers should be the favorite. They're bringing everyone back. They understand the division. I don't like the Saints. I don't think they're good. I don't think the Panthers are good. But it's like Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback in the NFL, and he wins games in the regular season, and they're going to be in a dome again. I kind of understand, Jason, why national media is into this.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, yeah, when you get an upgrade from Desmond Ridder to Kirk Cousins, you got a great opportunity to be better. We've seen the productivity he did in Minnesota with a good offensive coordinator. Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, is an offensive guy. But again, he was in that system for multiple years. This is year one in a kind of a new system in Atlanta, new head coach, defensive-minded head coach. He's used to playing for an offensive-minded head coach. So how does that play into the game strategy and things like that? We don't know. New opportunity, but it's nice to be Kirk Cousins and his agent. This guy knows how to print money. He gets teams to overpay. I mean, this guy got a 4-year guaranteed contract coming off of a Achilles tendon tear. Are you kidding me?
It's incredible. We got to get that lawyer agent on the phone. We need to work on this. The only guy, I'm trying to think, Jason, the only guy who's in that ballpark, Tobias Harris, who plays on the 76ers, he's gotten over $200 million, never made an all-star game or an all-NBA. It's incredible. Yeah. It really is. You look at the draft, it's going to be quarterback heavy, which is great. It's going to be fun. What quarterbacks do you think go off the board in round one then?
Well, I know you're a Chicago Bear guy. What is your thought? I mean, all the indications says they're taking Caleb Williams. One, I guess for me, it sounds like it's as the days get shorter and we get closer to the draft, it sounds like number two pick is probably going to be Jaden Daniels to Washington, unless something drastically changes the next several days. But to me, the pivot point starts at number three with the Patriots. One, do they invest in a quarterback at three, or do they potentially trade back and try to get another quarterback at like 10 or 12? Because you know Minnesota wants to jump up and get a quarterback. You know the Raiders. You know Denver. They're very interested. Is New England going to reinvest in that quarterback position? And if they do they take Drake May at North Carolina? Do you take J.J. McCarthy, who's been blowing up draft boards the last month, and a little inexperienced, but a lot of people think he might be really good. What do the Patriots do at three? And then the other pivot point is, does Arizona trade out at four, or do they take Marvin Harrison? Because you're going to have a lot of action between picks three and six, because you got the Giants at six that are seriously considering a quarterback with the Daniel Jones situation. You got the Raiders are at eight. You got Denver at 12 that needs a quarterback. And we know Minnesota, remember, they sneakily in the last month, remember, they picked up a second first-round draft pick from Houston. They got two ones to trade up from 12 to potentially the top three or four if they need to. And I'm with you, Mark. I know you and I talked a little bit. I think it's going to cost Minnesota more than two number ones to get up in the top five.
Yeah,
if they want a quarterback.
Yeah, this narrative like, well, Minnesota's going to do this and this. No, no, no. Minnesota is not in charge of this conversation.
Right.
They're the ones that have to go make moves. And I don't know about you. I know I feel like I'm a hater today, Jason. I'm not feeling the J.J. McCarthy hype. I don't see it. Do you?
I don't love it either. If I had to take one or the other, I would take Drake May over J.J. McCarthy because we've seen him do it. Again, has he had some bad games? Sure. But one thing we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy have to do is we haven't seen him have to throw the ball 35 times against a good defense. You know, he threw the ball one time in the second half against Penn State. That's more of a function of the running game for Michigan and the lack of Penn State's being an inability to score. I haven't seen J.J. McCarthy dominate a game against a big-time opponent. Did he play good against Alabama? Yeah, but that wasn't a vintage Alabama defense. Was he great against Alabama? I wouldn't say great, but he played good. I'll give him credit. And he's only 20 years old. The thing he has going for him is that he's only 20 years old. I think teams like a Minnesota, like a Denver, like maybe even the Raiders, they could sit him for half the year if they needed to for him to develop. I mean, a team like New England could potentially do that too. So I think those are the three teams I think are going to be really, really going after. Even a team like the Giants, because they have Daniel Jones for a year. But long term, I would probably take Drake May over J.J. McCarthy because McCarthy could be a bust. He does have some wheels that can run, but I need you, as you know, you got to be able to stand in the pocket and throw the ball from the pocket. You can't run around all the time. Give me a thought for you, Mark Moses. What do you think of Caleb Williams? Are you excited about that guy coming to Chicago?
It's such a weird conversation because I really like Justin Fields, and I watched him develop for three straight years, right? And it's like weird where you saw this guy grow, and then it's like, oh, sorry, you have to go now. Sorry, we're dumping this guy, okay? We're getting a younger girlfriend. Sorry, it's over. We're going with this. And I told you this before where it's the weirdest domino effect where they shouldn't have this pick. This should be Carolina's pick, but it's not. They wanted Bryce Young. They gave a king's ransom to the Bears. And then it really worked out for Houston where they got the better quarterback anyway in C.J. Stroud. That's what's so weird with this. I'm all in. Hey, you had to trade him to Pittsburgh, and I think he's going to play in Pittsburgh. I think it's going to flame out the Russell Wilson. I think by week four, it's the Justin Fields show, and they're going to run it down people's throats. Like, I'm very excited for him. I have to make sure Caleb Williams works. I think it is. I feel like, oh, he's going to show up, and he's going to throw 30 touchdowns. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He hasn't played a game yet, but I'll just tell you this. I'll let you go. Appreciate you coming on. You think about a rookie where you're going into a situation where you are going to have Keenan Allen, who's a stud, and then then you're going to have DJ Moore, you're going to have Swift, you're going to have offensive line, you're going to have a tight end, right? The defense is nasty with Montez Sweat. And you could have another wide receiver. I can't think of a better situation for a rookie. I can't.
No, he's in a great spot. And your Bears at number nine, you got an interesting decision to make. You go wide receiver, you potentially take another defensive end linebacker kind of guy to rush the passer. I personally think you probably take defense at number nine because you got enough guys, you got enough offensive weapons. Keenan Allen ain't going nowhere. DJ Moore ain't going nowhere. I think you fortify that defense with the ninth pick, maybe even trade down and accumulate a couple more picks there. You could probably still get a good defensive player middle of the first round.
All right. I tell this to everyone, especially in the first round, quarterback, offensive, defensive line. You got it. You know, the trenches. Right. That's the one. But you know what? We haven't had an offense for 100 years. So how about we just go all in and have the most dangerous wide receiving core in the NFL? How about that?
Right. Okay. And then, yeah, there's a lot of – I mean, I know there's a lot of chatter with Roma Dunze potentially going there. I don't think Malik Nabers will fall that far, but if he falls to nine, they would gobble him up in a heartbeat. But I know, again, good problems to have if you're a Chicago Bear fan this year. The ransom and the coup they did on the Carolina Panthers. And I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
A quarterback to be aware of, a kid who's from Tampa, where I'm at, went to high school in Tampa, Michael Penix. If this guy can stay healthy, this guy throws a beautiful deep ball. You saw the balls he was throwing. He's got a big arm,
oh, yeah.
A lefty. I think a team like in the middle of that first round, middle to late first round, Seattle, maybe even a Denver. He's a little older. Remember, he played 6 years of college football, so he's like 24 years old. If a team like those two teams that need some quarterback help, I think this guy could be a steal of the first round at the quarterback spot, even better than McCarthy, better than maybe even a Drake May. If that guy can, if they can get him an offensive line to help him, I think Michael Penix could be a real, real steal for a team looking for a quarterback mid first round.
24, what a grandpa, old man. Put him on Social Security. Jason Powers, check out his podcast, Powers on Sports, and with Press Box Radio Show. My man, thanks for your help, and I really appreciate it today. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you later. All right.
You got it, Mark. Anytime you need me, buddy.